everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you on this Wednesday, August 28th, 2024. Miss you so much, my big brother. A heavenly birthday to my only sibling, who's now been gone 3 years already. Wow. Tom Fairbanks is back. It's good to see Tom engineering and producing the program on the other side of the glass. Tom, did you have a nice, you were gone about a week, a little break?
Yeah, it was a nice break. I had a visit from my daughter, Vicky, came over from Dallas. So that was very enjoyable. I hated to see her go back to Dallas.
Yeah, I bet. We're going to take a little break from the monsoon here. Summer thunderstorm season began early, mid-June. So we'll take a break here today with all this overcast. Might get some, maybe a shower or two. But then very little chance of rain over the next 7 to 10 days. But knowing the way typically these things work, we'll probably get a surge again in September when there's usually a some kind of a tropical disturbance off the Baja. We get something. But certainly summer thunderstorm season 2024 is winding down. The Buckmaster Show is not winding down. In fact, we'll begin our 15th year already in January with our program. We come to you from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. It's part, this station, 1030 KVOI, The Voice, part of now five radio stations under one roof, all of them doing very well. This one is Tucson's only source for live local news and talk on the radio. We have our worldwide live listening. You can hear the program live by hear the live stream at buckmastershow.com, where we take the feed to from KVOI. That's the 24/7 feed of our programming. The Buckmaster Show live line for our telephone interviews, the live line number 79024, the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. So now let's utilize the live line, go up to Phoenix, and talk with Mike Noble. Mike returns to the program. It's been a few months. Mike is the founder of Noble Predictive Insights, based in the Valley of the Sun, a nonprofit public opinion polling, market research, and data analytics firm, Noble Predictive Insights. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Hey, Bill, I'm great. And just quick, I hate to be that guy to start off with. We're not nonprofit, we're for profit, but we are nonpartisan, which is, again, it happens because there's tons of partisan pollsters out there, but nonpartisans, it's like a polka dotted unicorn.
I was reading this off of your website, and normally when your eyes see N-O-N, non, in front of a P, you normally would just say non-profit, but no, you are non-partisan.
So non-partisan, that, yeah. For-profit.
For-profit.
Yeah.
Of course.
A professional service, sure. You know, just like, anyone's else out there.
Of course.
Anyway, sorry. I hate to start off on a bad foot. So I feel like I'm going to get some hardball questions now because of this start. So
Nonpartisan, but for profit. You've got to pay the bills for you and your team. And you guys, have been really busy. And why don't we start with what are you hearing? What are we seeing from Arizona statewide registered voter samples that you guys have been doing?
Depends on where you start. So, like, I guess we'll start at the highest end of the cone, which is, voter sentiment. There's a couple of things. One is, you know, Arizona voters are more pessimistic than optimistic when it comes to the direction of the state. Why that matters is that, you know, if you're an incumbent, or someone, in office right now, if people are very happy or optimistic about the way the state's going, that's usually a good thing for you. But if people are kind of like, hey, I don't like the way things are going, it's kind of an anti-incumbency mood. So kind of it gives a benefit to the challenger. So we see that the electorate is still more negative than positive. And then when top issues, the top issues still are We have four really top issues that Arizona's rank in their top three. Two are pocketbook issues, and then two are social issues. So you have inflation and like affordable housing as the top two, or cost of living. Those two, and then you have immigration, which is probably more fueled by Republicans, but independents lean a little bit more that way. And then abortion, which is really fueled by Democrats, where that kind of leans a bit more to Democrats. So kind of immigration is a big wedge issue for Republicans. Abortion is a big wedge issue for Democrats. But, you know, overall, you know, economic pocketbook issues are pretty front of mind for voters, especially independent voters and Hispanic Latinos.
Yeah, I guess it's pretty typical, Mike Noble. People think about the immediate issues, and we've kind of bridged this before in your visits to the program. I personally think water sustainability should be right up there, but it doesn't pull well. People are thinking about the immediate, hey, it just cost me X amount of dollars at the pump and the grocery shopping. They're not really thinking, is there going to be enough water for Arizona in 5, 10, 15 years?
You hit the nail on the head there, Bill, is that, you know, water is actually, I was just presenting to a big crowd yesterday, and that was actually one of the questions. Well, hey, well, what about water? And it's interesting, and you kind of summed it up, is that when polling, like if you were to take like the top 50 issues in Arizona and like, hey, which ones are like important to you or concerned to you, et cetera, like they're in the top five. However, when you stack it up to issues such as like, more topical, like that are kind of in your face issues such as inflation, as you mentioned, like whether it's grocery, going to the grocery store when you're buying a pound of chicken, or pumping your gas, that's where you kind of see those visible signs of inflation. It's kind of like immediate pain points. And so it's not until you have issues, and like water, for example, Arizonans, like Maricopa County, people really haven't ran out of water. Like water's fine as long as it's working, right? But like as soon as you don't have it, or like let's say your electricity's out, you care at that point. But like, you know, unless you live in like Yuma County, who's had those issues with, you know, Western Arizona, that's kind of had some of those water issues, you know, it would be on the radar. So it's one of those ones, it is important to the electorate, but it's, I guess, not quote unquote sexy, for lack of a better term, to the electorate compared to the others. So that's why you're not seeing people as talked about it. But when you look at folks that are in elected officials or administration folks in government, you know, water is a big priority for them. It's just, again, these other issues are just kind of taking precedent because they're more in your face compared to the other one is water. Just, you know, until you start running out of it, you know.
Yeah. Then
that are really good, the top issue, right?
All right. Let's talk about Trump versus Harris and compare it, if you will, Mike, to because the last time you were with us a couple of months ago, of course, we had an entirely different race than we have right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, we've if anyone watches Stranger Things, we've entered the upside down world, basically, in the election where, you know, and a lot of people I've talked to, they say, you know, like they just seem really confused, you know, with the election. It's like, well, yeah, it's kind of unprecedented where someone, a main candidate or nominee drops out early and then kind of a swap out, you know, 4 months before election. And, you know, the numbers change. And basically, the takeaway is this, is that the numbers showed it, like Biden in close battleground states since the debate and then some of the other issues after, is that the battleground states were starting to like really get out of reach for him, but also like safe states such as, or safe blue states such as like Minnesota or Virginia started to be competitive. So, I mean, the writing was on the wall, just a matter of when. And so when they swapped him out, it basically went from Trump kind of starting to run away with this thing to it's just now a more partisan race and just very competitive. Like it's going to be a really close contest. And Arizona is one of the key of the main battleground states that will decide this election. Arizona is one of those ones, if not one of the key ones. In our last poll, we showed Trump plus three against Harris. However, you know, there's been some other polling showing, you know, you've seen anywhere from Harris plus five to Trump plus five and anywhere in between. At the end of the day, it all tells you the same thing. Arizona is very close. It's incredibly competitive. And that's why we're unequivocally a battleground state and may decide who wins or loses or who sits in the White House.
What are people worried about? I see you've got the list here. I want to hit on that trust in candidates between the two on the issues. Rip through that before we take our first break, will you, Mike?
Yeah, so trusting candidates, basically on the issues, so the issue sets, where's the electorate leaning? Trump is definitely has an advantage with on the immigration topic, and then inflation, taxes, and gun policy. Harris has the advantage when it comes to abortion, climate change, education, healthcare, but affordable housing and uniting the country is kind of tied between, neither candidate has an edge. So basically, the more they can talk about those issues, those respective sides that benefits them, that will bode well with the electorate. But the more they're maybe on the opposing side's issue, that's probably a detriment to them. So that's where you're going to see that tug of war between the issues and what both Harris and Trump campaign are going to be driving.
How about the VP? Is that something that is going to make much difference, the vice presidential race? No.
It's more for the news cycle than anything else. I mean, the VPs historically have not made an impact on the race, and I think this one's par for the course. And so I think it's just more on the news cycle is where they'll have some type of impact, but it's really, you know, Trump versus Harris. And when Trump versus Harris, the big switch up, what happened was where with Harris coming in, basically these disaffected Democrats that were parking with RFK Jr. or undecided, they basically came home, but it went from Trump plus 10 with independents to Harris plus 5, so a bit of a swing with independents. But Latinos, Biden was only plus 2 when he won them by 25 points or so last time. Mm-hmm. It went from Biden plus 2 to Harris plus 12, and then 18 to 34-year-olds where Trump had a slight edge to now Harris being up 11 points. So it's kind of the groups you would kind of think that should be with Democrats, but they just weren't really excited about Biden, but now they are enthusiastic now about the Democratic ticket, which they weren't before.
Mike Noble is with us. We're going to talk more with Mike, Arizona pollster who founded Noble Predictive Insights. It's a nonpartisan but for-profit profit public opinion polling service based in Phoenix. Let's talk a little bit when we come back about congressional races, some of the other races folks are thinking about, Mike. So hang on the live line. We'll be back with you shortly. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com. Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Quality of Life Medical Center has served Tucson residents for more than 20 years. We understand the key to a long, healthy life is not just about getting the right medical treatment, but it's also about feeling good mentally and emotionally. Whether you're looking for preventative care or treatment for a specific condition, we're here for you. And we are accepting new patients for primary care, pain management, and sexual health. Please visit QLMC.com to request an appointment. Quality of Life. Our name says it all.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, and the green thing is Zocalo Village Studio, our midweek edition, as we get ready to close out this week. August already. That means, of course, the election is getting a lot closer, and that is our topic today with pollster Mike Noble. Mike's founder and heads up the nonpartisan public polling opinion polling service known as Noble Predictive Insights, based up in Phoenix. You know, Mike, your profession took a big hit in 2016. Everybody said there was no chance that Hillary would lose. I think there were a couple of outlier polls. What did the what did your colleagues, pollsters, learn from that, and it, perhaps methodology in changing the way you get your information?
Yeah, so two parts of that. First off is that, pollsters kind of got a black eye overall in the industry, but I can, you know, only be accountable for ourselves. We, I think in that cycle, we actually had a perfect record and called the presidential correctly in Arizona. So we're proud of that one. But basically what the issue was in the postmortem was that you heard about like shy Trump voter, et cetera, but a lot of the issue was that they weren't weighting by college education. So what was happening is that there was this, a bit of this response bias that was going on. So if you think about it, you take the voter file, let's say you have every voter's phone number, you take it, randomize it, you give it a call. Well, everyone should ideally have, you know, an equal chance to take the survey. However, but if you have folks like, let's say, college educated who are kind of working more from home, desk jobs, they can be on a Zoom meeting that are muted for like an hour, right, compared to, I don't know, let's say your blue-collar job where you're in a factory or, like, you know, framing houses, you probably don't have 10, 15 minutes to take a survey, right? And so what was happening is that people that were more college-educated were having much higher response rates, and non-college-educated were having lower response rates. Mm-hmm. And so basically it was not giving you an accurate view of the electorate because it was imbalance of having more college, and the more college-educated tended to lean a little bit more Democratic, a more blue collar tended to lean a little bit more Republican. So when that imbalance was happening, so that was a big issue there. And also methodologies like All Live Caller was kind of the gold standard for a while, but no longer the case. Basically, the industry has very much moved to multi-mode where, you know, for example, people under 30, it's like impossible to get them to talk to a live human being. They'd rather like jump out a window than talk to a person, yes. Right? But they'll text you. They'll text you. They'll do a survey online, like anything where you don't have to have like human interaction.
So 100%. Interesting. That's so.
But like
interesting.
Older folks, they like live callers, etc. Yeah. And then it'll mix in between. So it's kind of the right mode for these generational differences on how people do. Because polling industry didn't change for like seven decades. It was, you know, everyone had landlines, you randomize it. But as things have changed, and also the culture where people used to, you know the value of polling, et cetera. You know, people kind of got busy with their lives, et cetera. So those are really the two challenges, but I can say polling is definitely not dead. And especially last cycle was incredibly accurate, especially here in Arizona. Very good. It's just, my advice to people is just depends on who it is. There's certain people that are very trusted, reputable, and there's other ones that might be leading some folks astray. So just really look at their track record and background, I think, is probably the simplest way without digging into methodology.
How about the congressional races now? How about here in Arizona, Sisgamani and Engel? Do you have any take on that one?
Yeah, so what's interesting, so the battle for the control of the lower chamber in Congress or in D.C. may very well lead through Arizona because of the 400-some-odd seats that make up Congress. What's interesting about it is that or kind of boring about is that it's really only going to come down to 18 seats that are toss-ups. Well, Arizona happens to have two of those seats, which are the two you just named, Arizona's 1st and 6th District, Juan and Schweiker, both incumbent Republicans. And so both of them are going to have really big fights on their hands. So we'll start with first with Schweiker. He is in Arizona's 1st District, which is in northeast Maricopa County. So that kind of comprises of Cave Creek, Fountain Hills, North Scottsdale, some Phoenix exurbs. But what's interesting about his district, of all the congressional districts in the state, he's got the most affluent voters there, so most like college educated, higher income. Well, that group's kind of shifted a little bit to the blue team, and Biden carried that district by a couple points in 2020, but Schweiker was able to get some crossover Biden voters to prevail in 2020. So that district's tough. And then Amashaw had a very competitive primary for the Democrats to take on Schweiker, because again, it's a very gettable district for Dems. And so he's coming out of that, you know, with a lot of his money spent. So he needs to go fill up his coffers. So Schweiker kind of has a money advantage right now. And he's a notoriously hard campaigner. So, but Schweiker's going to definitely have his hardest reelection he's had, but a very gettable opportunity, I think, for Democrats. Now let's go down south to Juan Ciscomani down in southern Arizona, his district. His district, again, same like Schweiker, Biden carried that district as well back in 2020, but he got crossover Biden voters to ultimately win. And so he'll need to do that again. The difference is he's running against Democrat Kirsten Engel, who didn't have a bunch of other Democrats to run against. She kind of had a pass in the primary. So they're on parity with each other for campaign cash or money. So that's going to be a very competitive race too as well. But those are the two that are going to get a lot of not only national attention, but are the two biggest potentials of the incumbents possibly switching out, where the challengers are pretty strong. And then arguably you could say Greg Stand's district in Tempe, Arizona, competitive, but frankly, it's where ASU is, based on, even though it's an R+1 district, the way the independents really lean to the left there, you know, I think you'll have a fight there, but Stanton is in a safer category than the other ones. But, you know, that one could flip, but it's less of a threat compared to those two main districts. But that's the state of those two. And there's so little polling, by the way, on these congressional districts. I mean, it's typically internal polls. You very rarely get nonpartisan or independent polling because they're unique geographic areas. And so the polling is only really good for that specific cookie cutter district. And so you just don't see it often unless it's by a group that has a vested interest. So we'll try to poll in those races this cycle to give people a look at them. But try to look at the campaign cash race is usually a pretty good indicator of how those races are turning.
Is there a feeling on the legislative area that the Dems may be making some inroads on the legislature? Yeah.
So the state ledge right now is that, you know, Republicans have dominated the state legislature, both chambers, for about four decades. But right now, Republicans only have a 2-seat advantage in the state Senate and a 2-seat advantage in the state House. So it's like razor thin close. And so Democrats have a good opportunity, especially being in a presidential year, or turnouts higher, abortions on the ballot. So they got a lot of good headwinds for them. But, for them, it's going to be interesting to watch. But there's really going to come down to six legislative districts that are ultimately going to decide kind of how that goes. And so of the 30 districts, these are really the six for your folks to pay attention to, which is LD 13, which is kind of South Tempe, North Chandler area. Kind of where, like, where the Intel plant is, et cetera, that area. And then LD2, which is the old Cape Brophy McGee district, which is kind of North Phoenix and Northwest Paradise Valley. And then LD4, which is kind of your eastern part of Phoenix. And then LD9, which is your East Tempe, West Mesa, very Hispanic district. And then LD17, which is kind of your eastern Arizona with straddles Pinal County and Pima County. And then LD16, which is kind of stretches from like Maricopa County all the way down to like Pima, but it's predominantly Pinal County. But those are really the six districts that are ultimately going to decide if Democrats take control or not, which is interesting because we have an incumbent Democratic governor that's not up for two more years. Imagine how much public policy could shift in Arizona.
Big time.
If Democrats were to flip both those houses. That you saw that in a state like Michigan, where, you know, home of auto unions, et cetera, they had, you know, Republicans flipped the governorship, state House, state Senate. Literally, like a cycle or so later, they moved from a union state to right to work. And then decades later, Democrats finally got back control of the three. And literally right after that, they moved back to a union state. Point is that public policy, that Arizona is kind of on this razor edge. So not only on deciding national implications, but the direction of the state, you know, which direction it's going to go. Hence why, if you're going to vote, this is the year to do. I don't care who you vote for. Just, you know, get engaged because, yeah.
Mike, I've only got about 40 seconds. Two marquee initiatives, abortion and the border program. Those are going to be on the ballot. Any thoughts on that?
Oh, I do, because we actually have polling that we'll be putting out probably next week on it that we'll publicly release and basically shows that abortion is in a, for access, et cetera, is in a pretty good position, sitting around in the 60s, which is a good spot for that. And actually the immigration one, that border bill that the Republicans refer to the ballot, that's actually looking like it's in a pretty good position too. So as of right now, those both look like they are more likely than less likely to pass.
All right, Mike Noble, going to have to leave it right there. Always a pleasure. We'll check in hopefully with you closer to the election. Thanks. Have a great Labor Day weekend, Mike.
Oh, it's Labor Day? I don't even know. Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm excited for that.
Enjoy your labor. Enjoy your labor. All right.
Well, probably working. Hey, okay. Appreciate you, Bill.
Thank you very much, Mike Noble of Noble Predictive Insights. A nonpartisan for-profit public opinion polling service based up in Phoenix. Take a break here, mid-break, and the mid-week show of Buckmaster.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita's Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita's Sun, covering your hometown.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things have been really busy this summer thunderstorm season. Some of those storms have been so destructive and have just wiped out people's gardens. So it's that time of year now. Looks like hopefully the storms have kind of died down. So let's call it the replenish time of year for your garden. Go by Green Things, 3384 East River Road, by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Green Things on their 13-acre site. Also on the site is Zocalo Village. There's five shops there, and they have incredible merchandise like Talavera pottery. I think they've got the largest collection of Talavera pottery from Mexico in Arizona. They've got some beautiful imported things, beautiful dining room sets made out of different kinds of woods, including mesquite wood. And those sets are not imported. Some of them are made right here in Tucson. GreenThingsAZ.com, and their sister business is ZocaloVillage.com. Green Things now in their 53rd year of business, and they are open daily. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Everybody in Tucson and Pima County want their street to be safe. There's now a Safe Streets program in the city of Tucson, and with me in studio, we have two people who are very familiar with what's going on. Andrea Altamirano is the Transportation Program Coordinator with the Department of Transportation and Mobility, and the Senior Project Manager there in that department, Jesse Soto, is with us. Andrea, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for inviting me. Thank you.
Jesse, good to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Likewise. Thank you very much.
Okay, so let's begin with what we're talking about here. Andrea, everybody wants a safe street. How can we make streets safer here in Tucson?
Most definitely, we do want safe streets. City of Tucson voters in 2022 approved an initiative. It's called Proposition 411, Tucson Delivers Better Streets, Safe Streets. Through this initiative, the revenues that are collected through the half-cent sales tax over a period of 10 years will solely be used for neighborhood street improvements and system-wide street safety projects. So this program, the Safe Streets Mini Grant Program, is under the system-wide safety improvements project category. The Mini Grant Program, it really is created or developed to provide an inclusive and a community-led process to deliver safety-calming improvements into residential neighborhoods across the city. And these are done through prioritizing areas that are under-resourced and that could not otherwise fund their traffic calming improvements through the existing neighborhood traffic management program. And we can talk more about that program in a bit. I'd like to also explain what are traffic calming improvements. So these are things like speed humps, traffic circles, chicanes.
What are chicanes?
Yeah, that's a good question. I have that for you.
Yes. I'm not familiar with that term.
Yeah. So chicanes, they can be designed as water harvesting features to both manage the storm water, so all of the rainwater that we get on our neighborhood or residential streets, and they support vegetation. So chicanes function best to harvest water on crested roadways. So if there's roadways that are crested and there's lots of water and we need traffic mitigation in the area, the chicanes help with the storm water, so it's carried through the chicane that's along the curb.
Okay.
So it's a narrow curving roads encourage, when we have chicanes installed, it encourages that narrow curving in the roads and encourages drivers and motorists to drive more carefully because the road slightly narrows and then it widens up again. So it's all intended for traffic calming, traffic safety, really to reduce speeds in neighborhoods.
I like that term, Jesse. Traffic calming.
Right, yes.
Yeah. And before we continue on, Andrea, with some of that we talked about, traffic circles, speed bumps, the chicanes, there's some others we're going to get into in a second. But I'm interested, you've been with the department, Jesse Soto, a long time.
Correct.
I'm sure you were in on some of the discussions about what to put before the voters on that
Absolutely.
Prop 411. And how did all of this safe streets come up?
You know, that was a big part of what the discussion as far as once we started talking about the proposition.
Right.
It's like, how do we service our community better, in a better way? One of them obviously was by, you know, residential streets, because a lot of residential streets are older. Mm-hmm. So to maintain them, that was the big effort. To take care of those streets, to, you know, go out there and repave them again. But the other part was also talking about how do we keep these streets safe as well. Mm-hmm. Because what happens a lot of times is that we make these streets really nice and smooth and perfect, mm-hmm. but then that encourages racing, encourages speeders, encourages people to drive
recklessly.
Right,
because all the streets yeah. are going to get attention
Correct.
Here in the
that
next
is,
10 years.
Yes, sir.
I'm envisioning, Jesse, a nice
yes.
pavement here. And you're right.
Right.
If there
right.
aren't, like it or not, if there were a bunch of potholes, and I'm thinking, I've got in mind that area
right.
around Himmel Park, for example, by the very nature of the pavement, it discourages speeding. So
right.
it's traffic calming in kind of a
right.
weird way.
Mm-hmm. And absolutely. And so, yeah, so that's exactly what we talked about, is that how we keep our community safe. Because, you know, a lot of our residents want to go out and walk at night or walk
yeah.
in the evenings or the mornings, and they want to feel safe within their neighborhoods. So, you know, traffic mitigation, you know, allows us to do that, to keep their residents safe, to slow down traffic by, you know, installing traffic, you know, mitigation such as those, you know, traffic circles or speed humps and chicanes and those types of items.
And then there, Andrea, the raised crosswalks, that's where the pavement is, you're forced to slow down unless you want some rear damage on your car.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's another one. Pick up some more of these traffic calming devices.
Sure. So what I did want to mention is that speed humps are different from speed bumps. Speed bumps are much more aggressive, they're taller, and they're a little bit shorter, and they're primarily used for commercial use in, like, for example, grocery store areas, right? So the speed humps are intended for residential use.
Okay.
So they're not as aggressive, they're slightly longer and not as tall, but they most definitely do work as a traffic calming feature, right? So to make the driver slow down mm-hmm. their speed. Otherwise, you know, your vehicles get pretty messed up. The chicanes as well, you know, I was going to mention that in addition to the safety component, it also really improves, or it can beautify the neighborhood. It can mm-hmm. beautify the streets. So it makes it safer not only for the vehicles or the people driving, but also pedestrians and then also bicyclists, right? So it makes it a safer and a more appealing environment. Due to the fact that in some instances you can plant, plants mm-hmm. in the chicanes or in the traffic circles, that can also serve as water harvesting, mm-hmm. like water harvesting features. And in traffic circles, you've seen in some neighborhoods possibly people do wonderful public art.
They do some public art, mm-hmm. and they do put beautiful plants there.
Yes. And it gives an opportunity for people to work together and to do, you know, it's a community-wide type of project that really helps improve the neighborhood, and it just creates that positive atmosphere with residents.
Who has the say on what type of the calming device will go into a neighborhood?
Features.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, that if people are wanting to apply for this grant, they literally just have to tell us, you know, we have speeding issues on this street between this street and that street. And they can say, you know, we think traffic would be slowed down through a couple speed humps, or we definitely don't want speed humps. We'd prefer something a little nicer, maybe chicanes.
Mm-hmm.
So on the application, they would indicate what they feel is needed. And we also provide a menu of options, is what it's called, on our website, that gives you a description of the different types of traffic calming features that we offer. However, it does come down to our traffic specialists in our Department of Transportation who can,
they'll evaluate what they believe is the best choice, right?
Exactly, right. What can be done? And it also goes through a process where we send it to our various agencies. It's called an agency review process.
Okay.
And it this is to ensure that, you know, the plan that we're working on isn't going to impede police and fire, right? We don't want to affect the time that our fire trucks are going to drive through. So it does go through a series of agency reviews that would approve the plan or not. And if it's not approved, we kind of work with the residents to try to figure out alternatives.
And before we take our break, and then we'll come back and talk more about this, and we'll get into specifics, Jesse and Andrea, about how it's a pretty simple process to apply. We'll go over that.
Yeah.
But I was wondering, Jesse, does this have to be a formal neighborhood association bringing forth with this? Or can it be an individual? Or how does this work?
It does not have to be a formal neighborhood association. It just has to be just a resident within the Tucson community.
All right, good. Let's take a break right here. We're talking about Safe Streets, the mini grant program. This is an initiative that was funded by the voter-approved Proposition 411, which was termed Tucson Delivers Safe Streets Program under the System-Wide Safety Improvements Project category. So we'll be right back talking about trying to make our streets safer.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Quality of Life Research Center has conducted more than 100 clinical trials in Arizona over its 20-year history. Because of their success, participants may have access to a variety of treatments under study that may not be available to people outside the trial. And participants may receive compensation for study-related time and travel. If you think you'd like to participate in a clinical trial, please visit QLMC.com to view our open trials and express interest.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. I send so many of my listeners over to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. All I need to say is it's 10 to 15 degrees cooler over there. It's worth a three-hour drive. I'm looking at the midday temperature over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. I'll take 74 degrees anytime. That's perfect. Fall is coming over in the land of enchantment. It's only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. There's a ton of stuff to do over there. Check out their website, southwestnewmexico.org. We're talking about the City of Tucson Safe Streets mini grant program that originated with the voter-approved Proposition 411 a couple of years ago. That was the Tucson Delivers Safe Streets program. And we're talking about what are referred to as traffic calming. You know, let's calm things down on the street and make things a little safer. And there's a whole menu of options that can do that. And I want to, again, reintroduce our guests. Andrea Altamirano is the Transportation Program Coordinator in the Department of Transportation and Mobility. And also with us, Jesse Soto, Jesse's Senior Project Manager in that group. Jesse, real quickly, this is not an unlimited funding deal. There are limits here, right?
Correct. There are limits, yes.
Tell us about it.
You know, per application, we look at the residents to apply at up to $75,000 per application. Mm-hmm. So $75,000 can cover quite a bit as far as speed humps and traffic mitigation. But the overall, you know, program throughout the, you know, 10 years that we're, you know, getting this, a certain amount of money, like almost $500,000 per year is committed just to this effort.
Andrea, is it a fairly simple process? And again, an individual in a neighborhood can do it, a neighborhood association, whatever. How does it work?
Definitely. We tried to make it as easy as possible. The application can be found online on our website. I can give you the contact information towards the end of the program here, mm-hmm. but it's available online, and you can enter the information as you upload it on the website. And we also have paper copies, and not everyone can print a paper copy. So if they need a copy printed, they can reach out to me, and I'd be happy to get that application to them. There's simple steps to follow. We do have a deadline. Although we're applications are taken or accepted on an ongoing basis, for residents who wish to apply and be funded for the following year's implementation of the awards, they want to apply by the deadline, which is the last day of this year. It's Tuesday, December 31st at exactly 11:59 a.m. Hmm. Right? So
or p.m.
P.M., correct.
Yeah,
11:59, sure. 5 a.m. next morning is done, right?
I was thinking noon. No. You get to midnight. Okay. Or a minute
midnight.
Before midnight. Yeah,
there we go. Okay. So any applications that are submitted after the deadline will be considered for the next funding cycle, mm-hmm. and the awards for the following year. So once it goes through our process, all applicants will be notified regarding the status of their application in March of 2025 is when we expect to notify residents.
Is there a committee that oversees this?
Most definitely, since this is a voter-approved mm-hmm. initiative for accountability and oversight, the city's Complete Streets Coordinating Council, CSCC, they're a group of citizens that have been appointed by mayor and council. And in addition to technical experts that really help with the process to decide, right, what kind of mitigation plan would be best for the streets, they oversee the selection. The CSEC oversees the selection of Proposition 411 Safe Streets projects. And they also monitor the progress of these projects and the expenditures to make sure that we are that we're ensuring that the funds are spent as they're directed by our voters.
I'm looking at the cost on the menu. The cost goes anywhere from about $5,000 for just your routine speed hump, but could go up to $35,000 for a divider that deflects, slows down, or prevents a vehicle from continuing straight on at the intersection. So the divider would be, Jesse, the most costly product.
That is correct, yes. Yeah. And so, yeah, so one of the things that also in with all this mitigation, there is also a process that residents have to go through for approval. And what that consists of, real quick, is just if they select, for example, speed humps within their neighborhood, mm-hmm. the process is to then for them to go out with gain petitions. They need to gain 60% of the abutting area to actually approve that mitigation within their neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Once they gain that 60%, then it goes into reviews and it goes to agency reviews and approvals. So yes, but as far as the cost, there's a cost ranging, like you said, from $5,000 to $30,000. But at the same time, it just depends on what we see as far as what's the need for the neighborhood.
If there's speeding going on some of these streets, Andrea, is that an issue that should be brought up primarily to the police department or to you guys?
There's a couple of things that residents can do. It's we can either call the Department of Transportation. There's this wonderful new... I guess, what would I call it? It's a 311. It's a way...
Oh, the information, new information line.
Yeah.
311.
Right.
So
yeah.
Residents can right there, you see the speeder. They
if it's
see
not a total
happening.
Emergency, you can call 311
right,
to
exactly.
say, hey, I've got speeding on this strip, yes. and then it's going to be noted. Yeah.
Right. So you can either call them or you can do the application online. Or you know, go online and or you can use your phone, actually. Mm-hmm. There's an app that you can use, yeah. So
we're quickly running out of time. What do we still need to cover, Andrea and Jesse?
I would like to talk about the application process. There's three things that we want applicants to remember.
Okay.
So the three steps to apply is you want to identify, connect, and apply. So the first thing is identify the area that needs the traffic calming, right? The location. Where is the need? Mm-hmm. An example of this would be like we're talking about speeders, maybe cut through traffic on a street, and you know, examples of dangerous driving behavior. So these mm-hmm. have very good potential to getting good support on the application. Connect. So connect with neighborhoods. This is really a community building support type of program. So we want residents to talk with the neighbors, build support on the application. So the more support you have, the better. And then apply. So we're available for any residents who need help in the application process.
And the easiest way, perhaps, you know, people are out driving right now and they don't have a pen. You could just go to City of Tucson Safe Streets Mini Grant. Google that and probably get you there, right?
Most definitely, yes. That's the easiest way, Safe Streets Mini Grant Program, and they can find the website, okay. And my contact information is there as well.
Jesse, any final quick thought?
No, please apply. We're looking for the community members to put the word out. This is a great program, a great way to reach out to our neighborhoods and our neighbors and slow down some streets within the City of Tucson.
Very good. Jesse and Andrea, thank you very much. Good information.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate you.
Thanks. Thank you very much. Safe Streets Mini Grant Program. Again, just Google Safe Streets Mini Grant. You could even, I think, would get you there, Safe Streets Tucson. So that will get you to the right place. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Program Midweek Edition. Bill Buckmaster wishing everybody well.